Coming to you live from our Midtown Manhattan studios. It's the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrow. Welcome to Insight. Hopefully, the sun is shining wherever you are. We're going to get to the weather in just a few minutes because it's a common topic around here nowadays. Got a great show coming your way. We're going to be talking about a lot of information that has really no substance. Yes, I like to consider this show a show of substance for the most part. But today we're going to be covering a lot of stuff that's in the news that is substantial-less. It's all about materialism. It's all about social media. It's all about the me movement. Me, me, me. Not in terms about doing the right thing. It's all about the maniacal people in this world that we are surrounded by. Does that make sense to you? Yeah, I guess it does, right? How was your Memorial Day weekend? Wow, it was great. It was really nice down around here, except for the rain. So I guess we got to jump right into the weather discussion. And it seems like such a, trivial thing to talk about. But the reality is, I think people are walking around with a little bit of doom and gloom. Because our spring on the East Coast, as you know, we're broadcasting live from the Midtown of Manhattan. But the East Coast spring has kind of been non-existent. You know, trees budded late. I mean, we were getting cold temperatures, snow until mid-March, and excessive rain in April and in May. So even this past weekend, you know, the unofficial kickoff of summer happened this past weekend for Memorial Day. And the weather was great on Saturday, but ever since then, it's nothing. It's peaks of the sun here and there, but I think people are really kind of getting bummed. When you think of seasonal depression, you think of the humdrum days, long winter days, cold temperatures, covered up in jackets and sweaters and hats and scarves and gloves. But no, that's not the case. Pools are open, but there's just no goddamn sun. It's weird. It's really weird. Anyway, so let me know if you kind of are in the same boat. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. By the way, I got an email from a woman named Brenda out in Seattle who likes the show, listens pretty frequently. I'm not sure if she listens live or to the podcast. But thank you very much, Brenda. I really appreciate that. And your input is always welcome. My email is mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. mark@markfarrell, that's F-A-R-R-E-O-L, motivation.com. And I want to talk to you about something kind of interesting that – and I'm not really sure about the answer of this, but I've been coaching soccer now for – I think this is my fifth season. So now for the last two seasons, I'm coaching my 8-year-old son and my 5-year-old daughter. So I was always the assistant coach up until last year, and then I moved to the head coach position. And the reason why I remained as an assistant coach, number one, the head coach and I became close friends. And he has a personality like mine, just really outgoing, fun. We were just two peas in a pod with the kids, really clicked with the kids. And he had some good, solid soccer acumen skills in terms of as a coach. And I had, you know, a fair amount, but we just really worked well together. And unfortunately, we had to separate because his son was no longer in the same division as my son. So, and I was really intimidated to be a head coach because on game day, I have to see the players, of course, on the field. So with my vision, I was concerned not to be able to see all the players, you know, across the field. You know, when you're younger, the field's much smaller, much easier to see the players, and it's not as serious. And so anyway, I made the move. I was nervous. I was really nervous, but it's worked out, and I have a great assistant and coach this year. So what I wanted to talk to you and mention is that this season so far, we have 5 wins and 1 tie. And I attribute this to a couple things, and I'll get to the main point. But I attribute it to really working the fundamentals with the kids, kind of gaining their respect and always treating them very positively. Like, come on, you can do this. Okay, that wasn't a great kick, but your next kick's going to be better. Okay, throw that in. Okay, if you don't listen, if you're clowning around, I make them run. Because now they're at the age, 8 years old and 9 years old, I can make them run. So if they're goofing around, horsing around, I'm all for having a good time. But they're at that age where I don't have to say like, okay, guys, listen up. I'll be like, you're talking. Go run, and I'll laugh. But anyway, so I think it's about constant positive reinforcement. And I think that's really, really important because it increases confidence. It makes them think that they can believe in themselves, even if they don't have the greatest skills. Like there's one or two kids on each team where one of them, he has zero confidence. And his skill level is not that good. But I've been telling him, and he has to a certain degree been progressing every week. But I keep saying to him, listen, I'm really proud of you. You're going after the ball. You're taking the initiative. You're not hesitating. And you're going for it. And it's great. And, you know, I embellish it a little bit. And I guess that's maybe in certain points of coaching, you have to do that because you're dealing with personalities that are hardwired to confidence, which is hardwired to skill sets. All these things are very, very important. It's just like when I talk about in schools, whether it's drugs, alcohol, overcoming adversity, anti-bullying, mental health. If you're getting bullied, you may start doing drugs, or you may get depressed, or you may X, Y, and Z. So all these things are finely connected, like little dominoes. So here are all these players, 8 years old, and they're doing well. And of course, they make mistakes. Some days they're lazier than others. And we've had some, you know, severe luck on our side, I guess, sometimes. But overall, I think they're a good team. They're not an extraordinary team. They're a good team, a solid team. I'd give them, on a scale of 10, I'd give them a 7. 7. Just below a 7, maybe. But anyway, here's what I want to bring up to you is that during the halftime, before the game, it's important, the talk I give them about what is going to happen during the game, what we've done to prepare this game, how we're going to execute this in the game. Now, mind you, yes, they are 8-year-olds, but I think it's really important and we don't diminish the value of kids, young adults, youth, even adults, the impact of being reminded of how much potential one has. Correct? I mean, if we go to work every day and someone says, hey, I need that document that I've been asking you for. I know it's not going to be any good, but I need it from you anyway. So get it to me by noon. I mean, how would that sound? Versus, hey, I know you're really behind on work, but and you're slammed, and I know you're going to get that document to me, and I can't wait because I know it's going to be a home run, and I'm really looking forward to reading to that. But if you can get that to me by noon, I'd be even more delighted. I mean, that's how you switch things around, even though you think maybe the document is going to suck. Maybe it is going to need a rewrite. So I've been priding myself. I mean, hey, if I can't give a kid or a team of kids a motivational talk, then I have no business, you know, doing what I'm doing on stage talking to kids at school, even though it is a completely different set of skill sets. I kind of take all these different aspects of it, the important strains of it. The entertainment value is gone, but it's all about talking to them and making them all feel important, making them feel like they've worked really hard to get there. Whether they're at the practice or whether even we had practice that week because of the rain, the deluge of rains we've been getting. But making them feel like, listen, here's what we have to do. And one kid will be like, oh, I'll score a goal. And I'll say, well, that's great. But you know what? It's not that goal that you score that's going to be all on you. It's the person who got that ball, two people before you, who's going to pass it to someone else, who's going to set you up. I said, this is all a team effort. And it's maybe luck that the other, our opponent, the goalie, is not going to be maybe on their game. But all these little factors come into play. And I say to them, listen, You have to communicate. You have to talk to each other. You can't hog the ball. If you are a hog, ball hog, you are getting yanked out of the game. And I yank kids out of the game. And I cheer for the other team. When they make a great save, I say, hey, goalie, great job. And when they make a goal, I say, hey, great shot. And of course, then I have to build up the confidence of our goalie. But so that's kind of the gist of the pregame. The more important talk, I think, comes at halftime, because at halftime we're either ahead, behind, or tied. And you want to make sure that you end that game with more points. Now, they don't keep score in this league at this level, eight-year-olds. But we actually do. When I had to do the final coach report online, game report. But there's no scoreboard, and it's not announced. It's nothing like that. Like, I know, the coaches know, the ref knows. And maybe some of the parents, obviously, if you're keeping tabs. Like, the kids will be like, oh, we're winning 3-2, 3-1. I'm like, hey, doesn't matter. It's irrelevant right now. What matters is that we keep trying. We keep persevering. Okay, we're not passing well enough. We're bunching up. We're not playing our positions well. So going to the halftime point, this is something that I'd really like to read more about, to see the evidence in this. And we've all heard and read about great talks in locker rooms by the great football coaches across our land, basketball coaches. Hockey, I'm not really I'm not a fan of, so I really don't know about great coaches in hockey, but I'm sure they exist. But what I do is, for example, last weekend, we had a game, and we were, what was the score, maybe 2-0 us. So I said to them, okay, right now, in the other circle, here's what the coach is saying. The coach is telling them, you guys aren't working hard enough, you're not fast enough, you're not playing your positions, you're not deserving of what you think you are, or you're not working hard to get what you think you deserve, rather. So all these different things I was planning in her head. So I said to them, now, when the next half starts, this team is going to come out much hungrier, much faster, much stronger, because they have something to prove. Prove to their coach, because the coach is telling them that they haven't been doing all these different things. Things to prove to themselves, because they feel like they need to, because they should, because also the coach told them they need to and should and have to. So I was painting this picture, and I said, now, when we go out there, we're only 2 points up. 2 points in soccer is actually a lot, but not when you're this young. It can, you know, scores can happen very, very quickly in 30 seconds or so. So I said to them, so if you want to win this game, and it's not important for us to win this game, it's important for us to play the optimal game and as best as we can play. But if you want to do that, you have to elevate what we've been doing for the first 25 minutes and make it even greater. So those passes that we were working on, make it even smoother. Communication, even broader, louder. Those shots that you took from too far out, take those shots closer. Guarantee they're going to be a goal or a good save by the opponent. So all these different things, and I keep saying, you know, I'm proud of you. You're working hard. You're hustling, blah, blah, blah. But here's the reality. That other team right now is hungrier because they don't have the luxury of being ahead right now like we do. But since we're ahead, don't feel that you can just coast and take it easy. So I don't know if I'm doing it justice, because it's kind of hard to listen to yourself when you're giving this talk. And hey, but by all means, I'm not saying I'm a great halftime or a coach, motivational speaker, but I think there's something to it. And I'd like to find out and read up about this, because I feel that this is definitely having an impact on their game. And, you know, something's going right here, because we have 5 games, you know, no losses, 1 tie. So we're doing something right. So that makes me think about, yes, we're doing the practices and we work hard. And yesterday I ran them really, really hard, to the point where I thought 2 of them were going to get sick. But I said to him, listen, when we play another team, when their skill sets, their ball handling skills, and their shots are stronger than ours, guess what we're going to be able to do? We're going to be able to outrun them. And as the season goes on, we only have four more games. This is imperative because kids are going to get lazier. School's going to be out. Temperature is going to be hotter, but you're going to be in better condition. So I lay this all out to them. You know, I'm very honest with them. But I keep underlying, excuse me, how proud my assistant coach and I are of them for all their efforts. And I said, if you take a shot at the goal and it goes clear, you know, on the side of the goal, I don't care. You're taking a shot at the goal. That means you're confident in yourself and you're going for it, rather freezing and passing it to somebody else. If you're the goalie and you miss a shot, you know, and they get a score, that's okay. Did you dive for it? Did you try hard for it? If not, I'm going to teach you a better way of how you could have done that. And don't worry about it. Sometimes I say to them, you know, just make them feel better. Ah, even I couldn't have stopped that shot. And you know what they do? They smile. So it makes them feel good because the last thing you want to have a goalie is feel really kind of worthless and embarrassed because whole field is watching that goal and them feeling like, oh man, I let the team down. But I just think that there's something going on, something very positive with this team that I think is balanced with conversation. And sometimes I invite the parents over because after the game's over, you have to do the lineup. One team lines up, the other team lines up, and you do the whole high five, great game, great game, great game. Thank you, referee. And then we all sit down, huddle up, and they're just dying to get their snacks because the parents each week brings snacks. And I'm like, hold off on the snacks, and we talk. Even, you know, thankfully, each time we've won. So I said to them, listen, great performance out there. You know, we didn't do a few things as well as we could have, but you hustled, you did X, Y, or Z. And I think and my goal is every time they leave the field, whether it's for game day or practice, to make them feel good. Because the last thing I want these kids to do is walk off the field, get in their car, and for them to say to their parent or guardian, I don't want to play soccer. I don't like soccer. I hate soccer. I don't like my coach. This is boring. Not for me. And you know how kids make up excuses to not address something that really is bothering them. But so that's why my mantra is to always make them feel really good. I go up to each kid, give me a high five. You hustled out there, Mike. John, you gave it your best. You missed that goal, but that's okay. You know, you fell down, you got up, you went after that ball, you chased that guy down, like all these little things. So the lesson also for us as adults is, yeah, you may not be playing soccer, but every day you're on the field. You're on the work field. You're in the education field because you're going to school. There's the field of the family, you know, obviously trying to balance all these things to get everything done. So, you know, if we're always negative, you know, thinking, it's a rainy day right now in New York City, no surprise, as we discussed, so it's going to be a shitty day. No, it doesn't have to be a shitty day. After here, I have the privilege to go up into Upper Manhattan to give an hour talk on overcoming adversity to middle schoolers. So I'm feeling really, really fortunate. It's a long day. I had a spin this morning at 5 o'clock this morning. I had to do something else before I got here. I'm here. So it's a long day. And some people may be like, oh, I got a long day. It's blah, blah. But, you know, if you're doing what you love to do, then it's great. And sometimes, you know, yeah, of course, you know, by human nature, you're going to be like, oh, it's going to be a long day or I'm not into what I'm doing. The family's driving me nuts. The kids are out of control. My wife is whatever, or the husband is whatever, or both. So that's my point. I just wanted to share with you my experience with communicating positivity to kids. Always very important, whether they're on a team, whether they're, you know, you're tucking them in at bed at night, when they're saying something happened to them at school. I like to share my examples of when I was young. My wife does too, and she does an extraordinary job. And as a matter of fact, I love kind of eavesdropping outside the room sometimes because, you know, we rotate kids in terms of, you know, who tucks who in or whatever. And sometimes one of us will finish earlier and she'll say, oh, I really liked what you said to Danny or to Luke, and I think it's nice. Anyway, so food for thought. So if you're a coach, if you're HR manager, if you work in a place, obviously with mixed personalities, varying personalities, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. And so think about that next time if somebody is always that dark cloud around you, that energy vampire, et cetera, because, it's a good way to change the vibe about things. So the show is Insight. My name is Mark Farrell. It's 29 minutes after the hour. And wherever you are, I hope you're having a great time. I know a lot of people are traveling to Europe. A bunch of my friends are this summer. I am very, very envious. Italy, too, especially Italy. Oh, man, I'd love to go back to Italy. But that's not going to be happening right now. But maybe Roseanne Barr has some time to travel to Italy because you heard that the show got canceled. Yes. I can't believe. I am just baffled how some people can get in their own way. They are their own worst enemy. It was canceled on Tuesday after Roseanne called Valerie Jarrett, the former senior advisor to President Barack Obama, the baby of the Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes in a tweet. So, what do you say about that besides what in the world were you thinking? Oh, okay. It's all right, Roseanne, because you're on Ambien. So everybody has an excuse. It's kind of like Bill Clinton saying, like, yeah, I got high. I smoked pot once, but I didn't inhale. You know, come on. Now, you just had the amazing comeback of the world. I mean, wow. Your career just got catapulted into the stratosphere with the return of Roseanne. And how many shows, guys, how many shows were on the air? 3-4 weeks? Control Room? Anybody in there? Roseanne was on for what? 3-4 weeks maybe? Oh, was a whole season? So, oh man. So time flies. So they were going to renew and they didn't. So how many shows in a season? 7 to 10? Something like that. All right. So now she's out of job. You know what? And I really don't care about her. John Goodman, he seems like a really good dude, and I'm not really worried about him. But you know what's really unfortunate? All the people on the show, the grips, the camera people, the makeup artists, all these people who got employed and lost their jobs because of one tweet. Now, we know more than ever the power that the tweet can hold because of our dear president. But she blames Ambien. Now, I've been on Ambien before. I was on a boatload of Ambien because when I was in my worst stages of panic attacks and anxiety, I swear to God, I was getting like lethal injections of Ambien. And it would work for me for like an hour, two, three at a max. And I had so much adrenaline pumping through my body. I'd be like, whoop. Right back up, I'd be like, oh, my God, I can't believe Ambien at a high dosage only put me out for, whatever, 2-3 hours. So I don't fall for that. I think she's just, has a big mouth. She can't control her temper. She loves Trump, and she's very similar to Trump. And I think she's going to kick herself when she comes off her Ambien. And when she gets out of this fog, she's in to realize that, wow, this was a big mistake. And it's also been pulled on all the other channels, Hulu, et cetera, every other platform, digital platform that it was on. So, I mean, they spent a lot of money to revamp this and get it going again. But it just goes to show you, when I spoke to a senior class 2 weeks ago about, what happens when you put something out there on the web. Social media, I mean, it will come back to haunt you. Whether you think it's kind of inane, not that offensive, if it even dawns on you that it's the slightest bit offensive, don't hit send because somebody will be offended by it. Or you will obviously pay the ultimate price by either not getting a job, being looked over, whatever the case may be. Because that's your reputation. That's your thought process. If if what's the old expression? It's better to be known as silent than to speak up and remove all doubt. Something like that. Meaning like if you're ignorant or you have just very uneducated things to say, don't put it out there. Don't put it out there or get someone else to look at it. But, you know, I mean, Roseanne, what are you going to do? So, again, continuing with all this shallow news that we have. Well, you know what? I'm going to skip one of the shallow news and go to something a little bit more substantial, because this is kind of something I'm very happy to see. At the same time, it kind of makes me feel like, wow, you know, I just never realized how – no, I do realize how rampant mental illness is. But when it comes to people that are kind of dear and close to me, even not that close to me, that I have slight relationships with, you know, connections with. So I've been trying to get better at posting all the talks that I do, whether it's just a still photo or sometimes I do have somebody film like the first 30, 60, 90 seconds of a talk and put it up. I've been trying to get better about that as a business owner, as my wearing my marketing hat. Because of all the things you have to do, you're cold calling, you're a salesperson, you're a marketer, you're a gopher, you're everything, financier, invoicer. So I'm trying to get better about that. So what I've been doing lately has been posting more on Facebook about opening of my talks or stills, as I mentioned. So with that, you know, I mentioned like post on mental health and it was about X, Y, and Z. So, of course, you get a lot of likes and the comments come into me that are, you know, very heartwarming, I should say, gratifying. They make me feel good. But then I get the messaging. Messaging? Is it iMessaging? Messenger. And then it's like, Mark, thank you very much for sharing your story. I have to tell you. And then it goes on from there. That either their wife, their husband, their son, their daughter, or themselves are dealing with a bout of anxiety, depression, panic attacks. I'm sorry. I keep burping like crazy. I don't know why. it's great that they're opening up. And it's also amazing when you think about when you give someone an opportunity, just the slightest thing like a post allows people to say, oh, there's an opportunity for me to speak to somebody or to put it out there in the ether. And the ether is obviously coming into my mailbox. But I'm really glad. And in this particular week, I'm going to be speaking to two more people that I know, actually three. I called somebody by happenstance the other day who I kind of reunited with after years, who I wasn't a buddy with when I went to college with, but he's going through another bout of depression. And I got a message from him last night going, Mark, I can't believe your timing and how great it was to hear your voice, yada, yada, yada. I would love to hear back from you because I'm going through a hard time right now. And I actually reached out to him last night about 10 o'clock, and I guess he was asleep. We're going to try to reconnect today. But the other stories are of parents with actually not that young, both of them have daughters that are in their 20s. And it's great that they're opening up. And I'll go over there and, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I'm going to share my experiences with them and what worked for me and what they're experiencing and some tips that possibly they could try to do to make themselves feel a little bit more comfortable. Whether they're seeing a physician, a CSW, psychologist, psychiatrist, I don't know anything. But it's interesting when you put it out there that you give people the ability to feel comfortable enough to communicate. And that's great. And that's for all of us, guys. That's not just for me because I, you know, get up on stage and speak for a living. That can be for everybody. You know, when you put enough, and I don't want to sound like I'm getting all out there like, oh, put enough love in this world. But the reality is, you know, if you are a credible source of whatever your skill is, whatever your field is in, people are going to come to you and say, hey, I want to buy a new computer. Is there any way you could help me pick one out online? Costco's got a great sale. Can you pick one out? I don't know which one to pick. But, you know, if you have a specialty, whether you've been through something in life, another one of someone I know was kind of, I can't say attacked, but in a slight little fight the other day, but ended up with a severe concussion and maybe a little, a broken bone in his skull. And someone said to him right away, hey, you should speak to Mark when you feel better, because Mark was, he had PTSD because he was attacked in Hoboken by 15 to 17 kids a couple years back. And I was. And I did have PTSD, and it's something I dealt with and got through over a period of, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 months. It's good to be able to help somebody else, not just even by holding a door open in a pedestrian way, but I mean just by helping somebody out, whether it's they're in debt and you can help them figure out some financial way to make their – doing a budget for them for the year and saying, hey, things aren't that bad. You know, look at this. If you cut back here or don't do this, you can be able to pay off X, Y, and Z. So we all have a way of contributing to someone's life in a positive way. Of course, I'm talking about not in the best of times too, when they're kind of down and out on their luck. That's what makes the most impact on someone's life. Does that make sense? I mean, that's what I think. I mean, I always like to impact people's lives. I got a new neighbor. He moved in over the weekend. Excuse me. So I went over there, introduced myself, and they were all, you know, a mess and everything. I said, hey, listen, I just want to stop by real quick. I'll come over there back to your house with my family with a formal introduction. But I just want to let you know, if you guys need anything, I got lots of tools. If you can't find anything because it's not unpacked yet, you know, feel free to come on over. We got water. We got, you know, whatever you need. You know, I know you got kids. You know, I got some kids. We'll introduce them. They can play. But, you know, that's what makes people feel good, especially when you're moving into a neighborhood, especially when a kid or kids are being uprooted from one area to another. You know, it may be against their desire to move. For most kids, they don't want to move. You know, why would they want to move? This is their home. When, you know, that's their rock of Gibraltar, their home. The home is everything to adults and to child. It's more than everything. It's their universe, you know? So anyway, so you go out of your way and you help people out. And I think that's pretty cool. So back to the shallowness of the show. As a matter of fact, when I do a recap on the show, you know, we post all our shows up online, as I imagine you've read before, on PRN.fm. I'm not sure if you're listening to this or watching this on Facebook Live. Oh, if you are watching on Facebook Live, I got to show you something. Excuse me. If you can read this, I'm facing the wrong way. I got a new T-shirt, and it's my mantra. It says, my difference makes me stronger. Designed by Mark Farrell, so I didn't have to spend a lot of money. Actually, I think it came out pretty good, man. I got them in gray. I got them in black. So when I go on stage later today, I'm actually going to have a jacket on. And I'm going to have different things written on my arm. Like when I spoke last week at a mental health conference, I had the word depression written down this arm and then anxiety in big, bold letters, big, bold, Sharpie letters. And then when I take off my jacket, I say to people how I didn't tell anybody except for my family for a long, long time. And then I opened up to my friends, et cetera, et cetera. And then I say to people, and now, and to the audience, I'm saying this live, I say to them, and now I wear it on my sleeve. The reveal, either I take off my button-down shirt, dress shirt, or a jacket, and next thing you know, people see depression and anxiety written on my arm. And it's, you know, obviously it's not that well written. And I'm like, no, it's not a tattoo, because if it was a tattoo, it's by the worst tattoo artist in the world of tattoo history. Anyway, so today I'm going to write some different things on my arms, like pain, hurt, acne, vision, bullied, all these different things that kids experience that I experienced. So I can say the same thing. Before, I used to hide a lot of these things, and we all hide things in life, except Kim Kardashian, whose story is on deck. She can't hide what's her caboose, right? Anyway, so I'm out there, and I'm, that's what I was talking about, the T-shirts, and anyway, that's enough on that. So Kim Kardashian, I mean, can you make this stuff up? The White House and Kim Kardashian, do you think those two words would ever be found in the same sentence? No, no, and why should they be? Oh, I know why. Because Kim Kardashian has something she wants to get off her chest. Because here's the deal. Alyssa Marie Johnson made it to the West Wing thanks to the queen of reality television. Basically, during the White House, President Trump, Kim Kardashian met, advocated on behalf of a 63-year-old woman who has spent more than two decades locked away for a first-time nonviolent drug offense. And that would be Alice Marie Johnson. So in walks Kim Kardashian. She probably was, like, carried her. They probably wheelchair her in because, you know, she's too fragile and too perfect to walk. And there is a picture of her in the Oval Office. If you do nothing else the rest of the day, you have to look at this picture. Please. I'll even wait for you to look at this picture. It's on the cover of the Daily News. It's on the cover of every social media site that you could think of. President Trump looks like he is the happiest man in the world. Alex, did you see this picture? Right? Does he look like Christmas, like it's Christmas, like to the 10th exponential degree? I mean, just crazy. It's unbelievable. It's almost like, I don't want to say it. you can clearly see that both his hands are on the desk. But if his hands weren't on the desk, you would think that's why he's smiling. But I keep saying but because that's actually kind of funny. I just don't understand it. Nobody gets it. Nobody understands it. It should not have happened except that these two egomaniacs, reality TV stars, are together in the same room. And who knows if she is a blowhard like him about him. But, you know, obviously he probably thinks she's the cat's meow. And who knows, maybe we'll find out in 2 years from now that he has one of his guys has to pay her off to keep her quiet because of X, Y, and Z. So you know how things happen. But I cannot believe in this day and age. Well, I guess I can. But no, I'm sorry, I can't. I still can't put Kim Kardashian in the White House with this fool. So, I mean, maybe if they were on the same golf course or at an event, like a charity event, or his former pageant. I don't think he's part of Miss Universe anymore. I forget. The fact that she was invited to the White House for this particular cause. Hey, somebody behind bars for a first-time offense for two decades, I know nothing about. But, you know, is that a worthy cause for the president to pardon her? I have no idea. I don't know the background. Who knows? I don't want to speculate or comment on that. But the fact is that I just think it speaks volumes about our president's priorities, and more importantly, how he doesn't consider how he is perceived in this world because he does not give one hoot. And again, if you do nothing else today, go on and look at the cover of the New York Daily News. I think the New York Post has a great cover. Some of the lines are like, this is the only Kim President Trump can get. And then the other line is rump and Trump. There's a few other good ones, but they're just ripping him to shreds. I mean, he's his own worst enemy in this regard. So anyway, enough said on that. But, you know, again, I felt like I had to do like all this shallow stuff today because it's just everywhere. I don't get it. So, and continuing with it, it doesn't get any better. We're going to be going downhill as the show nears the end. So I just read about this. Have you heard that there are non-cheerleading cheerleaders? Sounds like an oxymoron, right? Yes. So many NFL teams, franchises, hire women to mingle in the crowds. We're not talking the suites, the real high-end suites where they have champagne and great food and all that jazz. These are girls that are mingling out in a parking lot and also in the stands, in the nosebleed sections, because they're simply there to basically tease the guys and make them feel like, wow, this is a great place to be. Not only can I drink beer, eat myself to oblivion, and drink, of course, and watch men, grown men, hitting themselves into unconsciousness, but I can actually grope a woman who's not going to say anything because she's getting paid minimum wage and she's hoping to get a job on the field as a real cheerleader one day. That's the reality of it. So they're called non-cheerleading cheerleaders. I'm serious. You have to look this up. The New England Patriots have them. Maybe the Broncos. Three or four other teams that were listed in the New York Times today. But it just kind of goes to show you. Now, is this purely for ratings? Because this is taking place not on TV. And I imagine they're instructed, the camera people, the networks, do not point a camera over there. If you do, it better be an audition, meaning the camera people in the studio, the producers can see it in the booth, but it does not go into program. Program is what goes out so everybody in the world can see it. But because that, I think, would be damaging, because it's kind of sad to say that they're catering to the core of ticket holders, guys, blue-collar guys who you imagine going back to work on Monday or Tuesday saying, you wouldn't believe it. I had this girl. She was sitting on my lap. I gave her a beer. You know, it felt great. You know, and they scored a touchdown. I didn't even see it because, you know, I had this girl on my lap. And it's really gross. It makes you want to take a shower. The fact that the NFL has stooped this low. Roger Goodell, come on. Oh, by the way, Roger Goodell, thank you for making a timely decision, a very timely decision on the standing of the national anthem. How long did it take you? 8 months? Come on. You're a leader of the most powerful sport in the world, and you're great at contract negotiations and things that include monetary decisions. But when it comes down to policy, you're inept. You have no skill set whatsoever. And this is something that maybe another 6 or 8 months you'll realize, wow, it's poorly reflected on the NFL to have women, scantily clad women, walking around a stadium in the hopes to get guys' rocks off so they'll continue to buy season tickets, come back, and do whatever they can do to get by, or as much as they can do to get away with, I should say. So it's kind of gross, right? I mean, first of all, I imagine myself sitting there with my 8-year-old son, and this cheerleader comes up, you know, scantily clad, dressed, and next thing you know, he's going to be like, whoa, you know, not saying that, but in his mind, I mean, what 8-year-old boy wouldn't? And then I'd be like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to move. I'm going to have to get myself and this kid out of here. I'm going to have to relocate my seat. Because you know what? It should be a safe place. Okay, there's going to be F-bombs dropped. It's a stadium. I get it. Come on, you guys suck, whatever, you effing, whatever. And I get that. You know, I talk to my kid and listen, some people just speak that way. It's not appropriate, et cetera, et cetera. But then if you have women walking around and then women behaving poorly, and sad that they have to feel that they have to do this to get to a level to become a cheerleader on the field, where we've read and heard they are equally mistreated by the actual management. They are sorely underpaid, and they're treated like second-rate citizens. And I don't even see why it's necessary. Why do you need NFL cheerleaders? Why do you need cheerleaders in general? When I go to a baseball game, like a Triple-A league, you know what's the most fun? The guy running around with a T-shirt gun. That's what I think is fun. Shooting those T-shirts out into the crowd, the mascot getting tackled or whatever, you know, doing silly antics like that. I mean, we have millions of people in this world in the entertainment business. We don't need to have that can come up with great skits, great ways to entertain crowds, whether it's video, audio, a combination of, a hybrid of. You don't need women or men. Not that there's many of them, down on the field shaking their stuff, because in this, you know, Me Too movement, this is the time to kind of put this under the looking glass. Why is it necessary? because, first of all, the owners of all these NFL teams can save a lot of money because a lot of them are being sued by their cheerleaders or former cheerleaders because of harassment, because of terrible work conditions, because of their schedule, because they're told they're too heavy when they're 3 pounds, 4 pounds overweight, and all these very, very surface-related things that come along with that industry. And yes, did they sign up for that? Yes, but that doesn't mean that they should be mistreated. Just like the same person who's working at McDonald's or any fast food restaurant should be mistreated because that's where they are at. And that's the money they need. So a Walmart, for example, when they doctor their timesheets, when they should be getting time and a half. And so when an employee puts down maybe 52 hours, they'll say the manager will write down 48 hours so they don't get overtime. Things like this happen. And the people in these positions that are working, you know, would rather be working somewhere else, rather be doing something for an employer that has respect for them, that can get them further in life, a better job, higher up in the pay scale, more respect, benefits, you name it. But, you know, that's the reality is that, you know, we're all in a certain spot for a reason, hopefully for not too long, because we're getting better at our skill set. We're getting better at our craft. But for some people who don't have a craft or a skill set, maybe they didn't go to college, and that, by all means, not that that is the end-all be-all, that's kind of where they're stuck. And sometimes when people are stuck flipping burgers, they feel like that's what I'm meant to do in life, is flip a burger. No. As a matter of fact, I'm going to digress here. There was a guy, I have a pool, and I maintain it, but the only thing I don't do is take off the cover because it's an extremely heavy cover and it's just a monster. And I was advised, hey, for $200, this company comes over and does it for you, boom. And I'm always there when they do it to make sure it's done right and all that jazz. So this guy was talking to me. I'm like, hey, how long you been doing this? He's like, oh, 5 years. He's like, yeah, I went to college, but he went like this, like, this is my world, pools now. I'm like, well, what'd you go to college for? He goes, audio engineering. I said, so what happened? He goes, well, I started cleaning pools. I'm like, well, what do you want to do? He goes, well, I'd love to do audio engineering. I looked at him and I said, well, how old are you? An old ripe age of like 23. He goes, 24. I'm like, yeah, your ship has not sailed, my friend. And I started talking audio to him because I've done a lot of audio in my life. And this spark in this guy's eye, I mean, I got bad eyes. I'm visually impaired. I could see this guy brighten up like a bulb. He was totally stoked, like, wow. Maybe this isn't the end of my life, just cleaning pools, opening pools for people. They were telling me some of the houses they go to, multi-million dollar homes. I'm like, so let me guess. So the people like me, you know, middle class, tip you, and the people who have these, you know, driveways that go on and on and on and on and on, and pools so big that, you know, you need a boat to get from one end to the other, they don't tip you, right? And he's like, yeah, most of the time they don't. And I'm like, let me take another guess. And those same people are not the same people who, like me, bring you out a Coors Light or a Corona Light. No, they hide behind the curtains. Sad to see, sad to hear, but, you know, that's reality. So, but the point is that it's never too late. You know, I'm kind of going off from the cheerleader thing, but, you know, if people feel like, oh, I have to do this to make ends meet, maybe just have to do it for a short term until you can find another job that's going to be less embarrassing, less painstaking, less maybe physically enduring, that's going to cause your body to break down. Don't think of yourself as a burger flipper or a cheerleader unless that's something that you really want to do, and that's fine. You know, that's fine. But if you feel like you're being manipulated, you're not being respected from the employer that you're with, then it's time to move on. And I know it's easier said than done. Here I am, easy, a guy spewing into a microphone, blah, 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 blah. But the reality is if you believe in it, you work hard, it may take some time, it can come true. So we talked about a lot of stuff that was, you know, kind of, you know, BS, but it's very valid in terms of our lives. This is here where we are about, you know, social media and Trump and, you know, cheerleaders and Roseanne and tweets and all that jazz. But you know what? I had my breaking point where I had to get it off my chest. So I thank you, especially today, for hanging in there and allowing me to vent. Next week, it's going to be your turn to vent. My name's Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. I would love to speak at your school, college, corporation, camp, conference, outing, whatever the case may be. Check out markfarrellmotivation.com, markfarrellmotivation.com. Gary Null is next. He always has a great show, compelling show. Turn it up, archive it, play it back, tell your friends. Have a great day. Enjoy.